But while the two words look alike, Seirugin and Seirusin, there's a world of difference between them, all right? So we learn that if he read it, Seirugin, in other words, a little bit at a time, with pauses in between, breaks in between, then in that case, as long as he did the entire Megillah, then he was Yotze. He fulfilled the obligation of the reading of the Megillah. But if he didn't say Seirusin in topsy-turvy order, then in that particular case, he has not fulfilled the obligation. All right. Rabbuna Omer, B'shem Rabbi Yehuda. Now, Rabbuna comes along and he says, in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, after Seirugin, Im Shahar Kedelik Meres, Kula Chozel Erom. He comes in with a new din over here. What does he say? He says, okay, granted that they said that you could read it a little bit at a time. But, he says, what if he read it, and then a long time passed, time enough that you could have read the entire Megillah from beginning to end, and then he first begins that to resume where he left off, then he has not fulfilled the obligation. Instead, what does he have to do? Close on the Rosh. He has to go back to the beginning and then read it in that order.
Okay? Length of time,
right, right. There's a somewhat similar did in connection with the Shemona Esrei, or Kriya Shema, and so on. But right now we're concentrating on the beginner, okay? All right, so, on the Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef said, Halacha k'Rav Yehuda. Yeah, the Halacha taka follows Rav Yehuda, Sh'eme Mishum Rav Yehuda. We said it in the name of Rav Yehuda. Okay. So, on the Abaye, so Abaye said to him, someone lay Abaye on Rav Yosef, he said to Rav Yosef, Kedei Ligma is Kula, the Echad Dekai, the Sefer, or do the Mereish on the Sefer. He says, when you say the amount of time to read everything, to read the entire thing, where are you talking from? Do you mean from the point where he left off, right, until the end? In other words, let's say he read one third of the Megillah, and then he didn't read any more for, I don't know, let's say a half hour. Okay? Now, in that half hour, it would have been possible, let's say, to read the entire Megillah, right? So now the question is, when he resumes a half hour later, are we talking about the amount of time from where he left off to the end of the Megillah, or do we mean from the beginning of the Megillah to the end of the Megillah? Is that, in other words, how do you determine the amount of time? After all, is it based on the individual, or is it based upon some sort of a uniform measure?
Would it even be worse if you had read two-thirds of it, or three-quarters, and you resumed in 15 minutes?
All right, but in 15 minutes, well, if you apply the first part, but as we see, the halacha really follows the entire amount, the entire Megillah from beginning to end. Yeah, so in that case, 15 minutes wouldn't be so gefelach. Okay? All right. But this is the question that he's asking. Right? Is it from where he left off to the end, or do you mean from beginning to the end? So on the way, so the answer that he gave was, from the beginning of the Megillah to the end. This is how we determine how much time should elapse before, you know, he has to start all over again. Because the im came, because if we don't rule that way, then nesata d'vayach n'shirin, which means that what din you gave over here, it all depends upon each individual person's measurements. Yeah, that's what it means, the shirin, right. Yeah, it's a very subjective thing, instead of having, you know, some kind of uniform or an objective measurement, you see.
Because then some people read slow and some people read fast and so on.
Yeah, right. I mean, everybody reads at a different pace, and also we don't know, you know, how long here, there, and so on and so forth. Right, you're absolutely right about that. So that's why he's still trying to give, you know, at least some sort of a uniform thing, instead of making it dependent upon each individual's subjective reasoning. Omer Rabba, Omer Rabbi Yomi, Omer Rabba, Omer Rav. So Rabba said the name of Rabbi Yomi, Omer Rabba, who said in the name of Rav, he said, Halacha to Rabbi Muna. You know, that Halacha Taka follows Rabbi Muna. Shmuel Omer, but Shmuel said, Ein Halacha to Rabbi Muna. The Halacha doesn't follow Rabbi Muna. B'sura Mas Nirachi. This is the reading that we had, the tradition that was carried on in Surah. You see, there were very great yeshivas in Babylonia. Rav's yeshiva was in Surah, right? And Shmuel's was in Pumpadisa.
I love that.
Okay?
I love that.
Yeah, right. Reminds you of Pumpernickel or something.
No,
Okay. Hey, maybe we should have like at Pasadena, California. We should have Pumpadisa, California. We know.
So, Pumpadisa.
Also in Babylonia, but a different area. Okay. Yeah, the two great yeshivas over there. Afterwards, there was another yeshiva in the harbor and so on. Okay. So, at any rate, but Sur and Pumpadisa remain, you know, the classic yeshivas in Babylonia. Okay. The Pumpadisa Masnachi, however, the tradition that they had in Pumpadisa was as follows. Omer Rav Kada, first of all, it's not, you know, Rav Abba, it's Rav Kana this time, who was the one who they quote, okay? Remember again that all these quotations that we read over here, they were not written down at the time. Instead, everything was an oral tradition, which means that it had to be memorized, and a person would recite it, in this, and then, you know, the Talmidim or the Rav, whoever it was, you know, he had to read on that basis. Right, they didn't write it.
They didn't have Alzheimer's, that's why they didn't have Alzheimer's, they kept that.
You're absolutely right. Absolutely right, believe me. When we come over here, we learn Gemara, we know that our mind is active and keeps away those bad germs. Okay. So, Omer Rav Kada, Omer Rav, so there it says, Omer Rav Kada, Rav, Halacha ka Rabbi Muna. All right. Halacha follows Rabbi Muna, Yishmuel Omer, in Halacha ka Rabbi Muna. Okay, guns fine. So far, so good. Even though the two different versions as to who originally quoted whom, right? But nevertheless, they both agree that what? That Rav said, that Rav says that the halacha follows Rav Muna, right? Namely, and Shmuel says no, okay? Now along comes another scholar. His name is Rav Bibi. I don't know whether his name is
Bibi.
Netanyahu or not,
Bibi.
I don't know.
Not Bibi.
Okay. So Rav Bibi comes along, and Master Yipcha, he learns just the opposite. He says, Rav Omar, Rav said, Ein halachik Rav Muna, Ein Shmuel Omar halachik Rav Muna. Okay? So Omer Rav Yosef, so what we say, Nikota Rav Bibi Biyotcha. He says, literally, grab hold in your hand of what Rav Bibi said. In other words, this really is the correct tradition, namely, the Shmuel who, the Chayesh Lechidoi, because this is consistent with Shmuel's opinion that what? That Shmuel is always concerned with a minority opinion. A minority opinion. Yeah. Right. So in other words, at times, Shmuel would prefer to follow a minority opinion stated rather than to follow the opinion which seems to be accepted by the multitude. Okay.
Excuse me.
Yes.
To ask for review, but what is the halacha here that if someone doesn't finish the Megillah, he has to go back to the beginning? There's some sort of time.
Yeah, correct. That's exactly what we're discussing. Yeah. So we haven't had the last word yet. Okay. Now along comes Rabbi Bibi, and he's right.
That's right. I was
right.
Trying to
exactly
find out what it was. That's
right.
Look at it.
Because he says that Shmuel is consistent, and now he quotes Shmuel is saying what? That you should follow the opinion of Rav Muna, right? That Allah follows him. Instead of before, they quote him as saying just the opposite.
No.
So, the Tanan, because here we have a parallel case And this parallel case really requires a little explanation on my part. Okay. The question of Shemeres Yogam Shekidesh Ochiv Es Achotso. Okay. First of all, we have to define our terms. Yogam, if you remember, means a brother-in-law in the sense that his brother has died and he's left a childless widow. She never had a child. Okay?
I'm sorry.
She is what we call a Yevama, okay? But they also refer to her as Shomeres Yevam, meaning that she has to wait for a decision of the brother-in-law as to what he's going to do, okay? There are two choices. One of the two choices is laid down in the Torah. One is that he marries her, okay? In order to fulfill, right, to create a household and that the memory of his brother will be kept alive, right? And the other one is that if they don't like each other, that he gives a chalitza. In other words, he has to go through a ceremony where she has to take off the shoe, she has to spit in his face, and so on. Yes. It's not a happy ceremony, but the point is, the symbolism is that she is now free to marry anyone. She's now released from the bondage, if you wish, the connection, you know, to the brother-in-law. So this is the Shomeres Yevam at this point. All right, now, here comes another complication. The complication is that the brother wants to marry her sister. Okay? Now, that is absolutely prohibited because we have different degrees of prohibited marriage, okay? Of course, one of them is the fact that you cannot marry your wife's sister, this we know, right?
Even after the wife dies.
Huh? No. If the wife dies, only at that point can you marry her sister. Right.
That's correct. Right. Alive.
Right. Right. It says the Torah, Bechayah. As long as she's still alive.
Right. Okay.
So even if he divorced her while and she's still living, he cannot marry her sister.
Right.
Okay? But after her death, then he would be permitted. But by the same token, we also extend prohibited relationships. So you couldn't marry her sister in this particular case either, because a Shomeres Yevam, her fate has not yet been decided, and if he decides that he wants to marry her, then this would retroactively be what? Would be a prohibited marriage. You understand?
Because being married to your sister is almost like being married.
Exactly. So, that being the case, right, getting back over here, Shomeres Yevam. All right. Shekidesh Echiv Es Achosa. All right. Now, his brother had performed what we call Erusin. What is Erusin? You know, marriage in those days actually consisted of two different stages. Erusin is betrothal, but it's not an engagement party. It had much more force. I mean, because it meant that he says to her, Ariat Mekudeshes Livet Habazu, you understand? And so from this point on, she is his wife, even if they have not yet begun living together. That's Erusin, okay? It's also called Kiddushin, because as I said, you know, what is the permission that you normally you say Ariat Mekudeshes. You say Ariat Mekudeshes, it would probably also get by. But if you say Ariat Mekudeshes, this is the standard formula. Okay? So, all right. So, in any case, let's say now, if there was only one brother, there's no question it would be prohibited. But the question is, if there is more than one brother, and it's the other brother, you know, the one who is not affected, who wants to marry the sister, should he go ahead or should he not go ahead?
There's more than one brother.
Yeah.
And the first one doesn't want her.
Yeah.
Does the second one have an opportunity?
Yes. Any one brother could do it, but usually they start with the oldest brother.
Yes.
Okay.
So, the seed is the same.
Yeah. So how? Yeah, I understand that. So how could he marry a sister, even the second one?
Yeah. Right. Okay. But that's the question. That's the question. Okay. So Mishim Rabbi Yehuda ben Basira, the name Rabbi Yehuda ben Basira is one of the very early sages in the Talmud. Omru, they said, Omru lehamtein, so they say to this, to the Yevam, to this brother, who wants to marry, he engaged.
He's a bro.
He betrothed the sister. And they say to him, Hamtein, wait a while, he says. You have to wait until your older brother decides which way he's going. Is he marrying her or not? If he marries her, then, they have one problem. If he gives a chalitza, then it's not a problem. You understand? Or, on the contrary, if he gives a chalitza, that's it. Right. Yeah. And she's released.
When this thing happens, if the second brother is already betrothed to the other person,
right,
and the first brother hasn't decided what to do, what happens to that betrothal?
Okay, the answer is that in that particular case, he would have to give her a divorce.
Give her a divorce. The one that he's betrothed.
Once condition has been affected, then in that particular case, you have to divorce.
He would be obligated to give her a divorce until the brother decides. And if he did that, could he then remarry her?
The only time that you have
complicated law.
Yeah. The only time that the Torah says that you cannot remarry the one whom you divorced is in the case of a Kohen. Kohen cannot do it. Okay? But anybody who's not a Kohen is permitted to remarry. So there's no restriction in that particular case.
Unless the wife was married to another person in between, right?
Pardon me?
If the wife is married to another person in between.
That's a really different story. Right, that's correct. Right, but we're talking about, if there's nothing in between, but if he wants to remarry, he could, unless he's a kohen. All right. So at any rate, Shmuel said, Halachik Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseiah. Which means what? Which shows that Shmuel disagrees with the rabbis in this particular case, who would permit the marriage to be sustained, you understand? And he follows instead the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseiah, who said, hold on, you have to wait and see until the older brother decides what he wants to do. Okay? All right. Let's see what time is it now. All right, we have a little time to do more. Okay. All right. Tanu Rabbanan. So now they go to a different problem. Problem is now a text of the Megillah. Okay?
What did that problem about the Yavam have to do with the reading of the Megillah? What was the analogy?
The analogy is this. According to Rav Bibi, it's more logical that Shmuel is the one who said, you can be more lenient in the case of Sivugin as compared to Rav Buddha. Okay? Well, let's reread the text again. Okay. Shmuel, who the Chayesh Lechidoyar, he is the one who worries about. Okay, all right. As I said, Rav Buddha is the one who said that that if the pause is so long that you could have read the entire Megillah, in between then you have to begin the Megillah all over again. Okay, and Shmuel accepts this statement of Rav Buddha, even though the sages did not really give a time limit. It was Rav Buddha who gave a time limit. So, in this case, it's consistent with the fact that Shmuel very often will accept a minority view rather than a majority view, and this is why he brought into business that we just read about the Shomeres Yovam, where, again, because he says that the halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseiah in this case, and compared to what the sages in general might have said, you see. That they would have permitted. Yeah. Okay.
This is in connection with the amount of time it takes to the pause.
No. It's simply to show that Shmuel is concerned with a minority opinion. Right. So if Rabbi Muna, who represents a minority in this particular case, because the sages did not mention anything about the time limit, okay? They simply said, if he read it, say, Rugin, the Yetzer, right? But they don't discuss the problem as to how much time would elapse. Yeah. So, therefore, this is a singular, you know, the view of a singular, single person, you understand? A single sage. All right. So, that's the reason why they quoted it, to show that Shmuel is consistent with his attitude that he will accept the opinion of one as against the many. Okay? We have a general opinion that says, you know, Yochin the Rabbin, that if you have a minority opinion that's by one as compared to the majority, then the normal rule is Halacha Kerabim. The Halacha follows the majority. But what Shmuel says is not always is that correct. Sometimes you have to follow the minority opinion rather than the majority opinion. All right. So coming back over here to now, as I said, here they're dealing now with the text of the Megillah. Ten Rabbanan, the sages thought as follows. Hishmit bo ha-korei posik echod. If, let's say, the person who was reading the Megillah failed to read one verse, right?
I think you may have gone down one verse. I think it's Hishmit bo
ha-korei. Pardon me, pardon you, absolutely right. Okay, right. Hishmit bo ha-sofer ha-siyos ha-psukin. I stand corrected, right. My eyes sometimes wander. That's why I have to have an eye operation.
You're allowed.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, you need a liner.
Yeah. Hishmet bo sefer osios of sukin. All right? Here's the case. A sofer wrote the text of the Megillah, right? But in his writing, he was a little sloppy.
He left out a letter.
Either he left out a letter, or he left out even a verse. Okay? Ukra on hakore. And then the person who was reading the Megillah aloud read it, kimeturgamon ha-metargim, he read it in the same fashion that the person who translates the text into Aramaic translates it, meaning what? Meaning as follows. This custom, incidentally, according to Ezra Ra'anon, still exists among the Yemenite Jews, that they read, and they have somebody who gives them the Targum translation, okay? So, in ancient days, this was the custom in Babylonia and other countries as well. That what? That you would read a pasuk from the Torah, and then the Meturgamon would give the Aramaic translation. Now, obviously, he wasn't reading from a text. How was he doing it? He's doing it orally. Do you understand? Meturgamon obviously had to be a great scholar who knew the Aramaic text, but he did it orally. Now, you get the picture now. All
it's
right.
Like a simultaneous translation.
Correct, correct. It's the same
the
idea.
United Nations,
yeah. Exactly. Okay. So, here is the person. He's reading it. He's reading the text, and lo and behold, he discovers, you know, that a letter is missing. Or he discovers that a verse is missing. So, what did he do? He improvised and he said it
correctly.
But yeah, he said it correctly. He knew the text. He knew the text by heart. No, he knew the Hebrew text by heart. Okay?
I think they say like, it's not.
It says like a Targumon. Like a Targumon. You see? Doesn't mean that you wait for the Aramaic translation.
Yeah,
what it means is that he does it in the same fashion as a Meturgamon, namely that that he does it by heart. He improvises
right.
By heart, okay? This is what he's doing, okay?
But I have a question about that. Doesn't that make that not kosher? If there's something missing?
Well, that's the question.
Oh.
All right. So what is the decision over here? Here it says, Yetzo. He has fulfilled the obligation.
Oh.
Okay? He has fulfilled the obligation. Right. So Nesfit. So now they counter this with a different tradition. Okay? What is it? Hoyubo osios with tushtoshos omikura os. Let's say that in the text of the Megillah, you had letters that were blurred. Matush Tosh in this case means like blurred. Or they like a tear in between, or something like that. Okay? So, imishumon nikar. So, this tradition says that if you could still recognize what the letter should be, then kashira, then it's okay. In other words, you can still use this beginner, and you know, obviously it means that the text would be, you know, you're able to fulfill the reading of the text. But the in love, however, if not, then sunnah. It's no good, right? It's invalid. So obviously you see two conflicting ideas over here. One says you could do, you could read the passage that was omitted, or the letter that was omitted, you know, you do it by heart, and you yotze. And the other one says that if you cannot recognize the letters, and here letters were written, but you cannot recognize what they are, then in that case, it's invalid. So, how do you resolve the problem? So he says, lo kasha. He says, it's not a difficulty. Why? If the entire Megillah was written in such a sloppy way that the letters were blurred, then in that particular case, such a text is what? It's invalid. But if only part of it, in other words, an individual letter or a couple of words or something like that, you know, then in that case, it would be considered okay. All right, that's what it says over here. Tanu Rabbonim. All right, now we come to the next one. Okay. First, we talked about the text. Now, how about the reader of the text? So, Tanu Rabbonim, the sages taught that Hishmet Bo'akore Posik Echad. Let's say that the person who's reading the Megillah left out a verse. Lo yomar, then he should not say, Ekres Kula, I'll read the rest of the Megillah in its entirety, the Achakach, Ekres O Pasuk. And afterward, I'll read that particular verse that I had omitted. Okay? Elo Kore, but rather he has to read the Oso Pasuk Veilach. In other words, he has to go back and read the verse that he left out and then continue reading. Okay?
Logical.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's in line
right
with what we've been saying.
That if he read it, exactly, that if he read it, you know, in the upside down fashion, right,
okay.
The same Rishon as it says at the top of the page, or the Mafreh, as we said, you know, mixed up order, then that would be a mixed up order. Okay.
All right, so
yeah.
Okay.
Nichnas the Vesak, what happens if a person comes into Shul? And he finds that the congregation already finished reading half of the Megillah. Okay? Lo yomar, that he should not say, Ekra chetzio matzibur, I will read the half, you know, that still remains together with the congregation. Be'achakach ekra chetzio, and then I read the first half. Okay? Ella, but what does he have to do? Kore yosem itchim osem yatzofa. He has to read it from the beginning to the end. Okay. Yeah. All right, I'll do one more little one based on the Mishnah, which said, misnamnem yatzof, a person slumbers, falls asleep a little. Okay? So they say, Hechidami, how do you define in this particular case misnamnem? Okay? Right, right. So, Omer Rav Ashi. So, Rav Ashi gives an explanation. He says, we're talking about a person of niim velo niim, which means he's asleep and yet he's not asleep. Tir velo tir, or he's awake and yet not awake. All right. So, how do we know? I mean, so that is the translation of misnamnem. You're half asleep and half awake. And then, how do we define it? He says, the korolei, the oni. If, for example, you call him, you know, you say something to him and he responds, right? Then in that particular case, you know that he's only a misnabdi, all right?
He's half asleep.
But the lo yoda la dure sevora. But he's still not in the ability in order to reason out anything. But at least he can respond, okay? And he but and then if you remind him of something, then he remembers. So in other words, this is what they mean by half asleep and half awake. But but obviously, what if Hitaka slept? And in that particular case, obviously, you would have to go back and read the Megillah. Okay.
So, all right. This is someone that's listening to Megillah, and he sort of can't, if you said David, and he kind of says, yeah, well,
right.
That's sufficient?
Yeah, that's sufficient. That means you're not completely asleep, okay? So you're a misnomed name.
So in other words, if you go in and you're late for the Megillah reading,
right.
You start.
Yeah.
So when you do that, if that's fine, the obligation is to hear it read.
Right.
To hear it read.
Right.
And you're coming in and you're late, and now you have to read it for yourself and see it. Actually, you're not hearing it at all. Oh.
Okay. Anyway, today is, let's see, the 15th of May, right, in the year of 2002. We are currently in Megillah.